dungeons are systematically built to break people mentally, to break people down, to make you give up, to make you beg to be deported. Even though, like, you're gonna face a lot of injustice in your own country sometimes, but yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned your time in the West Bank. You've been living in the U.S. for nearly a decade after leaving the occupied West Bank, where you grew up with your father. You came to this country to reunite with your mother, who's a U.S. citizen. Talk about that, your time, the comparisons you're raising, your time as a child in the West Bank.
And we just have 30 seconds.
I mean... I grew up under a military occupation. I grew up getting used to, if I want to go to school, I would go through a checkpoint, a military checkpoint. I was 9 years old, and I woke up on an Israeli soldier pointing his rifle on my face and laughing, literally laughing. I've seen my father being humiliated many times by the Israeli soldier. I experienced bombing, gas bombs. I've seen people dying in front of my eyes. Like, a father was shopping with his daughter, and he's just got killed for nothing.
I hate to cut you off. We have to end it there. Thank you so much, Lakhat Khordia. For you to be here in studio means so much. Palestinian protester released from a Texas ICE jail after a year.
Thank you.
HABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KABU comes from our members and from Energy Trust of Oregon, empowering businesses throughout the region with energy-efficient solutions that can help to improve the comfort, safety, and productivity of businesses. More info at energytrust.org. Energy Trust of Oregon.
Chew, 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 Althea, coming in steaming from the marathon. No, not even the marathon. The 50-yard dash you just did from your car to the stew, Dio, which is emphasis on stew today.
Welcome to Genius Box. I made it just barely in time, having been stuck behind the train. Any drivers out there also recently stuck behind the train?
Drivers.
Guys, call in. This is Genius Box. I'm Althea. Reed's here.
I'm Reed.
Reed's here.
I am here.
Nate's on the ones and twos. We got a great show for you this morning, even though I'm a little out of breath. We're going to be talking about some local headlines. We're going to have a little song at the midway point. Then we're going to have...
I will be performing the song.
Yep, we have that to look
Soloist
forward to.
Reed Johnson.
Launching your solo career right here, right now.
I came upon a midnight.
I was going to let you go. I was going to let him go, guys, but that's not what we're doing right now. And we have a call-in question later in the show. So look forward to that. How are you, Reed? Sorry, I'm all like nervous energy running in the door, you know.
I'm awesome. I'm
sweet.
A nirvana state of peace.
Okay, cool.
Just like kidding.
We're building a new dynamic, maybe, for this episode.
You can't see, but I'm. It looks like I haven't quite loaded because I'm vibrating so fast that all of the edges around me are kind of fluid.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are we ready to? Do we want to do the news or what?
Truth passed today.
Do we have to?
We passed last week.
No, we weren't here last week, so I feel like we got to get serious. Like, we often are very serious on the
Should
Genius
we say
Box.
Where we were last week, or are we going to save that for another day?
We'll save it for another day. There might be a little treat for you about where we were.
Maybe unbated breath. Yeah.
But we want to make sure you were good, so keep that in mind. Really withholding today. Okay. Yeah. Are you ready to get into this? I want to start with the homelessness data.
Mm-hmm.
Folks,
big story.
OPB is running a story with a political cartoon of Keith Wilson,
a crazy cartoon.
Level set. Our NPR, our local NPR affiliate, does not usually run news articles with political cartoons of the mayor. You don't even really get to see a cartoonized version of Keith Wilson that often. So, I mean, that alone is worth note.
But it's exciting.
The story itself is also interesting, and that's kind of what we're going to get into.
To preface the story, should Please. We describe, this is always fun, describing an image over the radio?
People love when we do that. Here's the gist of it. This is the an article from Alex Zielinski, Behind Portland's Homelessness Data, A Familiar Political Fight Emerges. Mayor Keith Wilson says estimates of homelessness increasing in Portland don't match his reality.
And then it's a caricature, I'll say, of Mayor Keith. And how you can tell that it's him is, one, he's got David Byrne-like sort of suit jacket, big giant 80s shoulder pads.
And he does the little quarter zip.
And he's got the quarter zip.
Loves a quarter zip.
And you can just see the faintest inkling of a freshly starched collared shirt underneath it.
Yep, yep.
Professional. Mm-hmm. You can also see the faintest inkling of some blue jeans, famous blue jeans, mm-hmm, at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And he's got a PDX pin, which I've honestly looks kind of like a Livestrong bracelet, but pin style.
Uh-huh.
But that should tell you, okay, we're in PDX, which hopefully the article that precedes it, the sure. title would also, or the fact that Keith Wilson
well,
mentioned
you, I think you want a political cartoon to stand alone, possibly.
If anyone's, yes, 100%. And if anyone's familiar with the great conservative political cartoonist Ben Garrison, who annotates quite literally every single thing on his cartoons, this is actually pretty tastefully subdued by comparison.
And this has turned into a cartoon sort of review show this morning.
Oh, and I've got 300 more cartoons to get through. We've got
currently just describe the image.
And he's standing next to a chart, a graph that says Multnomah County homeless stats. It's a kind of a dramatic
uptick
red line, and he's deftly flipped it over so that it's ticking downwards. All the words are upside down, and he's saying, "Here's how I see the numbers."
Right. So let's talk about what this is talking about, shall we?
Okay, I thought that pretty much answers it.
Well, that's the gist, but the minutiae. We love the minutiae on this show. Yeah. Okay,
we've opened up the shell, and now we're eating the delicious shellfish inside.
Okay, that's the metaphor you wanted to go with?
Pretty poor metaphor.
Are we spitting out the pearls or what? No, we're swallowing them. Anyway, new homelessness data is out about Multnomah County. Typically, how homelessness is quantified is through something called the point in time count, which is usually on a night in January.
Yep.
There's a bunch of volunteers that go out and they just count. They just that night in particular.
They go around and they count.
They count. They talk to people. Whatever.
And then they say, "This is the summary of all homeless people in Multnomah County."
Right, and it is regarded as an undercount. regularly. But
I would say so. It's a federal requirement, or it has been a federal requirement.
And that's how they determine funding for this kind of stuff, is based on that. This year, they also included, they added some nuance to the data by including in the count people who have at any point throughout the year touched the homeless service system.
Right.
So that could be staying in a shelter, that could be working with a service provider, that could be moving into permanent housing.
So it's, yeah, it's
and sort of tried to reconcile those numbers.
Which they've been collecting for the longest time, but basically it's not been able to inform their count of the population. And so now they're having this more complex inflows and outflows.
Right. Data. And so according to the county's data, around 3,000 more people are living unsheltered in the county than January 2025 when Wilson took office. Why is that a problem? I mean, aside from the obvious reasons that we would prefer to have people housed. It's safer for a lot of reasons. But Wilson's main campaign promise, you will remember, was ending unsheltered homelessness in Portland.
Ending it altogether. A bold campaign promise,
I would
say. A bold
campaign promise that people were like, yeah, all right, take a shot. And he, you know, they put up all of these temporary overnight shelter beds, which I think I would love to see kind of some data on that, because anecdotally, we have heard that they're not fully in use. Some of them are now being decommissioned. People don't really like staying like that, whereas like congregate shelter settings, whereas day centers are as busy as they've ever been.
And he also was trying to reconnect people with family outside of Portland and initiate sort of like a natural like out migration of people back to family and sort of like their networks that would be able to support them.
Right. So
that is to say, that has not, according to Multnomah County data, ended unsheltered homelessness.
Yeah, and I mean, let's note Multnomah County doesn't just include Portland.
It also includes
Gresham and I think Troutdale. Troutdale, call in. But
the
numbers, it can't.
It's a bit of a misnomer to say that this is an uptick, more so that it is maybe a reframing of how we understand.
But even so,
and I mean, it's hard to say because these are two different counts that we're now dealing with.
Right.
One was a well-acknowledged undercount, and another one is honestly from
probably
experts
more accurate.
A far more accurate depiction.
Right, totally. And it's not to say that it's like Wilson. I don't think anybody's saying that he's causal in this.
No.
But I don't think that the numbers necessarily support that his program, which is a lot of money has been spent on. A
lot of money.
Made a dent in this. And so, but he's sort of denying this. He tells OPB in an interview, quote, "The data as a whole isn't matching up with what we're seeing anecdotally."
Right.
So he's talking a lot about the decrease in visible homelessness, which I think is true. People, and there's like someone else quoted in this article who's a pollster, saying that people are not highlighting homelessness as their top issue anymore.
Right.
Also in the city county homelessness meeting in February, Wilson told the group, "We're messaging that unsheltered homelessness and homelessness is increasing, but we're not seeing it on the street. We're not seeing it with our eyes."
Which is, I know that Keith Wilson has spent a lot of time, on the street, going to shelters, interacting with like homeless populations, not denying that, but there's not so much weight and gravity behind. I'm not seeing that, so it's not true. The wealth of data that has been collected by people that work in like homeless services.
I wonder if you might also remember a key policy that, or perhaps an enforcement mechanism that Keith Wilson brought into effect in his tenure, which is, of course, criminalizing homelessness.
Oh, yeah.
Making it so that people could be cited or jailed for not going into these temporary alternative shelters that he put up that people don't really want to stay in.
When you're chief enforcer, maybe people don't want to be seen by you.
It's a great point. Maybe that's part of it. And just because it's less visible, the numbers would support that it's not, that doesn't mean that they're not there, right?
Yeah.
And so there's this other aspect of it, which is that Keith Wilson is sort of denying that this data is real or like matters, or the county's inflating it, and there's a whole other sort of funding tussle that we can talk about. But OPB got, through records requests, a presentation made by Wilson's staff that, I'll just quote from the article here, it suggested without evidence that the county may be inflating homeless numbers by double counting people who may give fake names to shelter staff. City staff pointed to conversations they had with some shelter providers who told them people had given them aliases. Mm-hmm. The document also suggests people may be using homeless services despite not being homeless.
What?
End quote. And then the head of the homeless services department, Anna Plum, texts one of Wilson's staffers saying nothing he's saying is true, as he's like trying to convince the city county homelessness.
So that probably explains force. That probably explains the 3,000 more people.
Yeah, that's probably 3,000 anomalies. In
that's
the
probably 3,000 anomalies.
And definitely not that the economic system is tough and it may be worse. And we're
the argument
more
that
accurately.
People are using homeless services even though they're not homeless is just particularly pernicious. I feel like it's just kind of a recycling of like the, you know, welfare queen, you know, argument that people are exploiting resources that are not meant for them.
I think that's part of it. I think
even if in some way that like that speaks to some people, like it is, I just feel like using that to justify dialing down this, like to undermine the reality of what, you know, like the situation, like home, you know, the situation for homeless people in Portland is just, it's a little disturbing, especially when it's not true.
Well, and it also, I think, relates to this narrative that other cities are sending people who are homeless to Portland. That's not borne out by the data.
That's another big myth.
I think also worth mentioning here, the count in January 2026, there's 17,948 people experiencing homelessness in Multnomah County, according to the count, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's also pulled out by people who are living unsheltered and people who are sheltered. So it's more of a gradient as to who is considered homeless. Like if you're sleeping on somebody's couch,
that's sheltered, but you're not in any sort of stable, you know, living situation.
Yeah.
And again, that speaks to the, like, what was a problematic with that point in time count is that you are selecting one point in time to address
a snapshot of one evening.
A snapshot of one evening that is really not the encapsulation of like the ups and downs of your life that sort of go on. And
and so, you know, people who are familiar with the data are saying this is like Mayor Wilson is being very political about this, that this makes his plan look bad, and which is just, I mean, just true.
Effective. He set expectations way too high.
Yeah.
He addressed it in a way that I think like any expert would tell you, you know, just increasing temporary transitional housing is not going to...
Well, it's not even transitional.
Not even transitional, I should say. Yeah, but temporary shelters.
Temporary shelters, which I think there's like a compelling case for the idea that it is a humanitarian crisis on the street that people need shelter at night. However, there's nuance to that, you're making
an unjust sort of connection between that and getting people out of homelessness.
Right. And I think part of his whole plan was we're going to put up all of these temporary alternative shelters that will allow us to either sweep people into shelter, send them out of town to their family or whatever, or jail them.
Yeah.
And then we'll work on the whole connection to housing thing. I don't know that those things should have been ordered in that way. I think it's sort of a both and situation. But I mean, they declared victory on this in December, that they put up the amount of shelter beds that they wanted to put up, some of which are now not, I mean, some of them, I mean, they were seasonal, right? We're moving into a warmer season. That won't be as many. There's also the nonprofit Sunstone Way is shutting down. So there's like some 100 or so shelter beds that are closing right now. It's like facts don't care about your feelings. You know what I mean? Sorry, not to like parrot conservative talking points, but to just discard it outright.
Deal with this reality, Mayor Wilson. Don't just, you know, shield your eyes from it. Like the fact that we have a
better estimation of what like the homeless population is in Portland doesn't necessarily discredit the work that you're doing. It should speak to a continued commitment to doing that work or improving upon it. It's so interesting to see him think that this is like somehow an indictment of him or somehow like
or,
it all like revolves around
into,
him.
It's turning into an indictment of the county, and it has to do with the distrust between and the discord between city and county when it comes to homelessness.
Right. And that's been
longstanding,
consistent for years.
Yeah, I want to quote former County Commissioner Sharon Myron spoke to OPB about this.
Back in the fold. Sharon Myron.
She says, is the central city looking better? Yes, it is. Does that mean numbers have lessened? No, just because you don't see them on the street, they don't magically disappear. At the end of the day, he's just playing politics. So that's Myron's take. City and county got together in 2016 to create the Joint Office of Homeless Services. That has now been just called the Homelessness Services Department. The mm-hmm. last city council sort of overhauled. There was frustration from city officials that the county wasn't doing enough. Historically, the relationship has been that the city concerns itself with infrastructure and the county concerns itself with people. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of been, I don't know if that's official anywhere, but that's been like the understanding. But during the pandemic, when there was all this new money flowing in, the city of Portland also took up some of those shelter and the caring for people mm-hmm. aspect of it. Some of which the joint office, I think was, I don't know. It was like it's been a difficult thing to run and who owes money to who. And now that the city's running some sites and the county's coordinating others, there was an audit several years ago of the joint office of that they weren't really getting money out the door. They were having like $50,000 contracts held up by a $25 charge or something like that, which I think they've worked out by now. But there's like a longstanding history of like frustration between the two bodies. Everybody's excited to renegotiate in 2027. Of what this might look like, but it's also part of this, that this feeling that the city doesn't trust the county's data, doesn't trust the county's work per se, mm-hmm. and where does that leave us though? And when both bodies are facing big funding cuts that they're going to have to make.
Feds might be pulling their funding out.
Just across tons of different programs, there's less federal money, there's less state money to go around as the problem is either getting worse or crystallizing how bad it is. And I, from the city council meetings and committees that I've been hearing, I don't know that the big amount of money that we spent on the temporary shelters, I don't know that that's going to come back around as we go into budget season this year for Portland. So anyway, but they're like
he's back is against the wall, but this is just the best place that you operate from. This is where you know no one can get behind you.
Absolutely. He's going to come out swinging. And like just this whole saga of that city staff and county staff had dueling PowerPoints that they were sending back and forth trying to correct the record. Everybody wants to control the narrative. Does anybody want to do the work? You know what I'm saying?
Profound.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't.
Dueling PowerPoints is such a powerful image of the Wild West is still alive.
Two different slideshows on two different screens and both just yelling over each other.
Both star swiping your way into a profound.
The star wipe. Man, I haven't thought about PowerPoint transitions in a while. That's really what that's what passes for fun around here, I have to say.
I will say there's been some stagnation in the PowerPoint transition world.
We need innovators.
We need a new class of innovators.
Have you seen, what's the one that makes you nauseous? It's not PowerPoint, but there's another thing that does that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Roller coasters?
It's like a roller coaster.
Oh, is it like the one where the screen comes out and suddenly you realize that it's a three-dimensional, it shifts on like an axis and the new screen comes into being?
Yes. That's what I mean. Again, that we're talking visuals and it's not helpful profoundly, to the people. Well, okay. That's sort of, any final words on the homelessness data and the Wilson with his back against the wall?
None right now.
Okay. You chew on it.
I'm chewing.
Okay.
I got my mouth full.
I want to give the people also an update on what is going on with the new owner of the Portland Trailblazers, Tom Dundon.
He's finally spoken. He has spoken.
He has finally spoken to us. We've been covering this because the state and the city and the county are going to put up big money to renovate the Moda Center, which, let me check, yeah, it's okay. It's just fine as it is, but he wants it renovated. And for the longest time, Dundon has not said anything about him putting up more money for the stadium, not said anything about keeping the team in Portland. And what we've heard about him is he's a guy with exacting standards. Exacting standards. And so that's, but he's finally spoken to The Athletic.
He's, yeah, a man of exacting standards and a man of, let's say, sort of dubious legal standing in terms of many states
and
in terms of being involved in two companies that have maybe committed criminal acts of
misleading the public, defrauding people,
right?
Things of that nature. But so the New York Times, The Athletic does this interview, this Q&A with him, which Reed and I would like to perform for you. I will be taking on the role of the journalist,
I will be playing the role of Thomas Dundon.
And can you tell me a little bit about some of the character choices, or do you want to just kind of leave it on the field?
I think that I'm going to play Tom as a subdued, thoughtful, compassionate.
I thought maybe you were going to bust out your North Carolina accent, but
I will be thrusting out my North Carolina accent, which is very similar to my Savannah accent, very similar to my general East Coast accent, sort of.
He's really good, you guys. He's about to disappear.
The North Carolina person that I'm playing has spent a lot of time in New York. Of course, a world traveler, so.
He's very method, I will say. He's been stretching.
Yeah.
And then
I've been trying to get Althea to sign a high interest loan for the last 45 minutes.
If you heard any shuffling, that's what that was.
I'm currently trying to repossess her car. So.
Okay, are you ready for the performance?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the interview with Tom Dundon with The Athletic, performed by Althea and Reed. Some people are fearful you'll move the team out of Portland. Can you offer any assurances that you won't?
We haven't spent any time on that. Dwayne and the team have spent all the time trying to figure out how to renovate Moda Center. Anything that people write or say, it's just made up because nobody has spent time on that. I fully expect to get everything we're working on done. That's all we can really do is work on that.
Why won't you put any money into the arena?
Well, so the way the arena works, the arena deal will work, is that we are going to commit to be here for a long term, 20 years, and that commitment's worth way more than anything else anything else anybody's going to do. And so
20 years is pretty standard, though.
I don't think so in terms of the market.
So you think 20 years is enough currency, so to speak?
20 years? That's a lot.
Historically, other owners have committed years and put in the money.
In Portland?
Is there a message you want to deliver to fans?
I'm more like, we just got to do it so you don't really have to tell stories. You should be able to notice the team improves, things get better. Hopefully, we'll get people in and out of the arena faster. The food's better. Experience is better. When you go, we win more, and you can see the difference in the product now we play. I don't think I'm supposed to promise people this or that because I can't predict the future. I just know that the expectation should be high across the board.
And scene.
And scene.
Did you guys like that?
Okay, that was... I don't really know where that accent came from.
I don't either. I mean, like I said, you're very method. It emerged in the moment.
Kind of a JFK-like Tom Dunn. I might have just thrust him into national political contention.
It was JFK.
With that accent.
Ask not what your team owner can do for you.
Ask not
what
to
you
pay
can do
off.
For the Moda Center.
That was good. You should have done Tom Dundon.
Yeah, do you want to take it from the top?
Okay, one more time.
No.
From the top, and this time
on
with
the twos and on the twos.
Emphasis on the ones and the threes.
Okay. Takeaways from this message, the message to fans. I don't think I'm supposed to promise people anything. We're not even working on possibly leaving. No, everybody's just working on squeezing money out of the taxpayer. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, just basically we're just waiting for that that $300 million of free cash to drop into our pocket.
And we'll be here for 20 years. Isn't that good enough?
I like the idea. Haven't even been thinking about
leaving
Portland. That's funny because everyone else has been.
Everybody else you're is wringing their hands.
You're the only person that, you know, it's a little rich hearing from team president Dwayne Hawkins on Think Out Loud
a couple weeks ago
saying, you know, we are putting up our hands to the crystal ball that is Tom Dundon, and we are fearful that he may pull out, but we have not heard from him. We have not spoken to him about that, and he has not said anything about that. But
we were actually handed a little slip of paper before we walked in the door that says, under no circumstances do you ask him about this.
It's just like, I mean, it's just so much bluster. Honestly.
Here's what I don't understand. Why is this the line that he won't cross? Why is this the moral line where he doesn't even have the dignity to lie to us? Do you know what I mean? Subprime auto loan tycoon Tom Dundon.
Yeah, he's made a lot of promises that he can't
Can't even lie to us. I don't understand. This is the moral code?
I think because normally he interacts with a single low credit individual as opposed to an entire city. So it's just like a different
state, really.
Like, I can lie to an individual, but an entire state?
That's a lot of people that might get mad at me if I tell them the wrong thing. I guess that's true. It's interesting to hear from him. Again, now I'm just picturing him with your sort of JFK impression, yes. Which I think is coloring it a little bit.
Yeah.
But why does he seem like he's not even thought of it? We don't have to litigate it for too long. We can.
I will say, so the aspects that we didn't get into in this interview, he talks about the interviewer asking him, you know, should people be fearful of their jobs with this new ownership team coming in? You know, there's often that comes with a kind of an overhaul of management. And his response is, you know, basically, if you're not living day to day with the threat of losing your job, losing everything, then that's not a very productive mindset to be in.
Yeah.
Which I think should just kind of show you the caliber of person that Tom Dundon is, which is basically like, you know, in my ideal world, in my business ethos, you should be feeling the sword of Damocles hanging above your head at all times. Basically, anyone's job is on the chopping block if ever it needs to be. That there is no security in my world.
Except for myself,
of course. I've obviously got, you know, $600 million of public funds that are paying for all the stadium renovations that I could ever ask for.
Yeah.
Basically just increasing the value of my team without me having to put any money into it.
How have you not thought about it? I mean, he has to. I mean, that's just obviously a lie, but it doesn't even seem like a particularly productive lie.
You're trying to say that you're such this
great guy. And what the reporting that we have heard is, if you want to know what to expect with him, look at what he's done with the Carolina Hurricanes, which he wants like to be a top contender. He wants to be like the Lakers, basically.
Right.
And I don't.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's cool, but I don't know that that's what the moment or the city calls for.
We're calling for the team to stay.
Yeah.
Again, we were talking about this.
Please don't take our Blazers away.
Tom, we're the Trailblazers. We are not the Lakers. We don't have a... We've won the NBA championship, last I checked, 50 years ago.
That's perfect. We love that kind of thing in the Northwest.
Don't set expectations in terms of things that you can promise, which are staying here, which is something that you can today say with 100% certainty, as opposed to I will win the NBA championship, something that I guess every other of the 28 or 29 NBA teams
win it this year or you're cut loose, bud.
That's right. That's
go
what we
work for
do.
The new newly minted newly reminted Seattle Supersonics. Hello. Sorry, I can't switch allegiances now. I guess actually that was my predating allegiance. So
I'm just watching you dig this hole.
Okay. Should we take a break? Are you ready? You're listening to Genius Box. Yeah. I'm Althea. Don't be so sad. We're going to hear a little tune and we're going to come back to the phone. So see you in a sec.
Bells all seem to say, "Throw cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good." watching from everywhere, feeling the air. Oh, how they come crazy.
Merry, 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 merry Christmas.
This is what happens because I was stuck behind the train. I didn't realize that was going to be our midway song. Excuse me.
I was begging Nate to let me do a little karaoke on that track. I said I was going to be the soloist for the mid-show song. No one believed me. So we played the track, but did not allow me to sing over it. So I apologize. People were probably confused. It's not seasonally correct. It's not really a song that either of us like. It's not a song that we particularly feel strongly about. It's honestly not a big Christmas music fan, and it's honestly one of the worst Christmas songs, in my opinion.
You've heard of Christmas in July. Get ready for Christmas in April.
But my performance would have justified the playing of that.
The whole thing.
So, yeah.
Oh, got me going on that one. Okay, Genius Box, we're back. It's time for the call-in question, and it was April Fool's Day this week, and that inspired our question. We want to talk about foolishness. Did you guys get fooled on April Fool's? But also, when's the last time you got fooled? Can you tell us about that? That's 503-231-8187 on the phones. You can also message us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
And then didn't we want to talk about also how you deal with...
Yeah. How do you deal with that feeling? Because it feels bad.
Sometimes it feels bad. Yes.
Sometimes it does feel
100%.
Bad. 100%. Sometimes it does feel bad.
Sometimes a little new perspective.
Yep.
On life. I guess it's... This would be the interesting thing. How do you take it?
Yeah. Well,
and in what context that it presented in changes the way that you deal with being, thrown for a loop.
Here's the extra context that I want to kind of add as why I feel this is justified and worth talking about is that this sort of fear of looking foolish is something that motivates a lot of scams in the world, and
100%.
part of why they often persist is because realizing you fell for something that you weren't supposed to fall for is really embarrassing, and I don't want to tell anybody. And so it could even be the case that you don't have support in that instance. If you got scammed out of money, it's possible to get it back, but you have to admit to somebody that happened to you,
and it's stigmatized.
Yeah,
admitting, you know what, I did not foresee these consequences.
Yeah, I wanted to be wiser and I wasn't.
I put my trust in someone I shouldn't have. I believed something that was totally erroneous.
Yeah, I can tell you one of mine if you'd like, because this happened a little while ago now, but I was thinking about it yesterday, and that little burn of like, ugh, stupid, still got me yesterday. And it's on, and this is also kind of a bigger thing right now with AI and falling for stuff that is just not real. Sometimes that's news stories that aren't real, or in my particular instance, and maybe I'm going to say this and you're going to be like, that's not that big of a deal, Althea. It's like AI animal photos of like the bears playing with all the apples. Do you know what I'm talking about? And I would, I
can imagine, I suppose. I could just type in bears playing with apples.
Truly an insurmountable amount of apples that they were playing in. But I like sent it to my friend and I was like, wait, shoot, that's AI. And I feel embarrassed because now I told somebody that I fell for it.
I've also sent an AI picture and it's humiliating when it's revealed to you. No, in fact, I think that's AI. Or mine was a video, I should say.
Yeah.
It was a motorcyclist that's parked at a stoplight, and they have a clear bag on the back seat, and there are two adorable kitty cats. And
we can really get got by cute animals.
Fighting with each other, and then as the person who's in the car behind them is filming, then the cats turn to the camera and they stop.
It's really not a safe way to transport cats. Well, it was AI.
Well, that's not really the thing that I was latching on to.
No, it was how cute it was.
It was adorable.
Yeah. But here's the thing that I think that we have to work through.
Right, before we just go through every single cute animal
that's not even real, is just that working through that feeling of embarrassment how do we grapple with that? Because part of like not dealing with it is not good, from scams, from AI, from fake news stories, especially because sometimes you hear like a line or somebody says something about a news story and you sort of run with that, and people are like, oh no, I don't think that's true. And then when someone corrects you, you say, well, it's like it could be true.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound like that could be real?
I saw it with my own eyes.
Right. Or so somebody told me that, and it's almost like it could, but like, doesn't it say more about the state of the world?
Isn't it sort of psychically true?
Yeah. We have to deal with that somehow. We have to get over it. Oh, shoot. What do we say? What do we say when we've been fooled? Give us a call, please. 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
We've got Jeff on the line.
Hello, Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you? I hope you're well.
Thank you. We're all right.
Pretty good.
My late mother, God rest her, famously said, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Which is pretty good advice. But I called really to hark back to the top of the show where poor Althea was stuck behind a train.
Indeed.
Which is not uncommon in our fair city. But I just wanted to express how grateful and lucky I am that we live in a city that has built not one, but two bridges over the railroad for pedestrians, for bicyclists, and all you little motorists. Well, too bad. So let's stand for something so that we don't fall for anything, shall we?
I like that, Jeff. Thank you very much. I think that's something for us to carry forward.
Unfortunately, certainly. My stance of cute animals has left me prey to cute animals.
Yeah, same. My stance of enjoying things that are adorable.
Pro infantilizing animals has left me prey to infantilized portrayals of animals.
Can I tell you what else I've fallen for? I think it was like a baby ostrich or something.
Yeah.
Hey, baby ostriches, they're kind of ugly. Sometimes baby animals are not cute.
Oh, okay.
Not cute to us.
So that's what you stand for?
I don't think that they need a makeover, but like there's it got into, let's recognize that it gets into the part of your brain that there's the cuteness impulse that gets tapped into, and that's not your fault per se, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. And same things about having a trusting nature, I wouldn't say is a bad thing, you know? And I don't want us to eschew that entirely, but we should reconcile with that sometimes we are made foolish. That's what I want to say. Is that all right with you, Reed?
That's totally fine. Oh, yeah. No, I'm very pro self-humiliation.
Well, yeah, you or get on this show every week. Hey-o!
Oh,
give
okay.
Me one.
Press that toilet flush, Nate.
Nate's busy. It's okay. He's getting people on the line. We would love to talk to Barth, who is on the line. Hi, Barth. Hi, Barth.
Good morning. Happy post-April Fool's Day. One of my coworkers got gagged by another coworker. It was great. He drove his wife's car to work, which doesn't happen very often. And the coworker said, is that your wife's car out there? And he said, yeah. I said, well, it's got a flat tire. And then he said, oh, April Fool's. So he got him right away. it was very effective.
That's nice, though.
The best trick that I had played on me in this way was a coworker, small shop, and he was complaining basically the whole shift. Oh, I slept wrong. My neck is real stiff. It hurts, you know. And so he went on and on. And then just before lunch, he said, I got to do something about this. And so he cradled his jaw in both hands and twisted his head sideways. Well, he had concealed a styrofoam cup in his hand.
Oh.
And when he twisted his head, he went crunch. And I thought his head was going to come off of his body.
Oh.
He really got me wonderfully well. It's a great trick. But don't do it with anybody with a weak heart.
My dad would always do the pasta in the mouth and then cracking the nose.
Oh.
That trick would always get my sister and I.
Yeah, nice.
Similar, that's similar thing.
This one was so three-dimensional. The sound was so large and so unexpected that it just really got me.
Man. That's a true casualty of the recycling era. You can't get a styrofoam cup to break that good anymore.
That's true. You got to go
well,
in like
there is that. I guess oil change you can or something. Figure something out.
Yeah.
Also in your thing about AI and trusting and images, remember that the stuff that you go look for all the time is the stuff that gets put onto your feed by the bots. So you're not necessarily going to get unbiased information about anything,
mm-hmm.
but it's important to verify if it's something really shocking, really political one way or the other, medical or health information. You really need to verify those before you start spreading them around. I'll leave it at that. Thanks, folks. Bye.
Thanks, Barth.
Thanks, Barth. No, that's very true. It's comforting to see some states now requiring like watermarks on videos to, you know, determine if they're AI generated or not.
Yeah, my understanding is that only some of the AI generation apps even offer that feature, and I think you can turn it off. So that's troublesome in some ways. But
boy, would have been nice to have had some sort of regulatory, you know, intervention that doesn't just force people to rely, you know, to be their own auditors of of the internet.
I will say, with the pranks that Barth was talking about, with saying that someone got a flat tire, just kidding, that the emotion that you get afterwards from being fooled is relief. That's nice. It's like, oh, actually everything's fine.
So it's good that they did that, because I would say that in my opinion, lowest form of practical joke is the
it's the least just, elaborate.
The least it is very it's simple and effective.
Yeah. I will say I think a lot of that pranking type energy got expelled probably 10 years ago when not jokes in psych when those were really in the zeitgeist. I think we expelled a lot of that energy that, to the point right now, nobody expects a not joke.
I got a not joke a couple months ago.
Did you?
On my birthday, actually.
On your birthday?
Yeah, and it was shocking.
Was it devastating?
It was, no, but it was just like, it was
Was
like,
it funny?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Okay, so no. I'm at liberty to say.
It was like finding a Jurassic creature encased in amber.
Right.
It was like a sudden jarring connection with the past.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
It's like, oh, they're still floating out there.
They're still out there. You could still make them. You could still make them. You never know who you might get. We have Tawasi on the line. Hi, Tawasi.
Good morning. I've been fooled quite a bit. And fortunately, I'm still able to laugh about it. But I was thinking about this time I got fooled, where I really put a lot of myself into the prank, and I just like became so emotionally, mentally, and physically invested that when it turned out it was complete baloney, I was devastated because I really poured my heart into the Bernie Sanders campaign, and it was just a prank. It immediately became apparent afterwards. I was like, oh, I got played. And like, I went to rallies, I did phone banking, I like donated, I really put a lot of thought and energy and just poured myself into it, and it was just not true. So that, you know, that's how it felt to me afterwards. It had this feeling of like, why did I believe that? Why did I believe that? Like, and now every 4 years I'm like, not this time. Ha ha ha. Because, you know, okay. Charlie Brown and Lucy. Okay. Classic prank. Oh, you want to kick the football? Psych. I'm not going to move it this time, I promise.
Right.
That's how I feel about politics. You know, whether it's Keith Wilson or Tina Kotek or Ron Wyden or, you know, President Trump. They have this like, oh, look, here's the football. You can kick it. Believe me. And then you go to kick it and they're like, ha ha. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I wanted to mention before I go, which is less to do with pranking, but it is to do with being deceived. We're told that there's no money in the Parks Department for keeping the lights on. Remember that? They're like, oh, we have to turn off these lights. We can't replace the lights in the park. We don't have the money for it.
Yeah.
But right about 11, I don't know if it's actually at 11 o'clock, but they do a little get together and then they're like, hey, let's go out there and mess up every homeless person that we find in the park. Like, great. And so there's this group of complete dill weeds that go around attacking homeless people in the park. And they're called park rangers.
Hmm.
And they have a huge amount of money to go out every night and kick people out of the park at midnight.
Hmm.
And after they leave, the people come back. But in the meanwhile, a bunch of people get trespassed, a bunch of people go to jail, and it doesn't actually stop people from being in the park after midnight. So I hate the park rangers. I feel like it's a prank, and I don't understand why we have them. We can't afford them. Mm. They don't actually provide a service at midnight. I don't know who they're protecting the park for at midnight. But if there's any city councilors out there listening, why are there park rangers? Why are there midnight attacks on every city park across the city? Why do we justify that funding? Are you pranking us?
Mm.
Because it doesn't seem like a real thing to attack the most vulnerable, to waste those resources, not housing anybody. Park rangers don't house anybody. They don't bring resources. They're just like this. They're like the Israeli occupational force is what they're like. They go out there, they do horrific things, and we pay them for it. I mean, I moved away from Portland. You pay them for it. Ha-ha. There's your prank.
There's the prank.
There's the prank on
I knew
us.
You'd bring it back around to Tawasi.
But anyway, unsheltered homelessness is a choice made by the wealthy for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get a vacancy tax in place, it makes more sense for landlords, land barons, land thieves to keep their houses empty. We need a vacancy tax. That vacancy tax can pay to shelter people. Or they can just rent out the buildings and stop just holding the buildings hostage. So we actually have spaces for people. It's just wealthy bastards keeping them away from us, including the parks. So anyway, thanks for your show.
Thanks, Tawasi.
Thanks, Tawasi.
Appreciate it. I want to circle back to one thing that Tawasi said about Lucy and Charlie Brown and the football and getting the football yanked away. And this is the thing that I feel that I've come to recognize, which is that if Lucy ever is able to get her hand down and Charlie Brown connects with that football,
it's going about 2 feet because Charlie Brown is so uncoordinated.
Maybe. But also, we have to then make sure, like, hold her hand in place for the next time he comes up, too. Like, it is, there's no permanent solutions, basically. Even if something's working, even if something's popular, it still has to be watched, transparent, and supported by people in order to persist. There's a lot of, we can't take it for granted, unfortunately, that Lucy will have her hand down, even if we were able to get her hand down at one point because everybody was standing around watching and saying, Lucy, don't do that nonsense again. Do you know what I mean?
No, I can see how that metaphor could apply to, you know, the political realm, like Tawasi saying, you know, it's easier to exploit people's expectations than to meet their demands.
Whoa, that's a heater. Yeah.
And certainly you get much more money out of political donations than you get out of actually resolving fundamental social, political, economic conditions.
Yeah. Even stuff that we thought was solved. Because there's a zillion Lucys out there, by the way. Even if we got one Lucy nailed down, it's like, oh, great. We don't have to deal with smallpox anymore. Sorry, you don't like that metaphor anymore?
Christ-like Lucy.
Lucy.
She's the exploiter. Charlie Brown is the martyr.
Yeah, right. Well, somebody needs to be on the damn cross.
Okay. Okay.
Ever going into Easter. Pontius. Sorry, we don't like that. Okay, we have Arthur on the line. Hi, Arthur.
Good morning, Althea. Good morning, Reed. I got two things to say to wrap up the show here. Peanuts and trains.
Peanuts and trains.
First,
they go well together.
Exactly. Charlie Brown should just kick Lucy in the head.
Okay, all right. I think we're unfairly maligning you, Lucy.
All right. That's a shortcoming. And regarding freight trains, I don't have a car. I just have a bicycle and me. And every time I come across a freight train blocking my way, I pick up my bicycle, I climb up one side of the train, and climb back down the other.
Yeah.
I've seen people do that.
Catching out for a second.
Let me follow up and then I'll shut up. I'm a part-time writer and I wrote a fictional story based on this, right? And it features that process of climbing a freight train. The only people that read my stories are my bartender and my bike mechanic.
Are they discerning audiences?
I have a very small audience.
Are they appreciative audiences?
Appreciative. They always do good work on my bike and my ears have always been plenty.
Okay.
So anyway, both of those individuals, they said, oh yeah, we've done that freight train bicycle thing. They both of the two people that read my story, they both said, oh yeah, I've done that before. Like, that's commonplace.
I've done that before too. There's a third person.
I gotta go.
Okay. All right. Let you guys.
Hi, Arthur.
I was going to mention, actually, I was thinking that when Jeff was talking about the pedestrian bridges over the trains. Some people are not waiting. Some people are climbing through the train.
I do that.
It makes me a little worried to do.
Sure. I think there's...
But sometimes they're so slow moving and it's fully 20 minutes.
They're completely stopped because they go into the Brooklyn Yard and they're allowed to make the trains as long as they want. And so they're fully stopped and they're like a mile long.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a story a while back, not in Portland, but out in the Southwest somewhere. The train's so long that there was full-blown train heists stealing unreleased Nike shoes, but it was like 3 miles back on the train, so the one person operating it didn't even know about it. Like a whole ring that they busted out in Arizona or something.
Good. They should be doing that and teaching them a lesson.
Why have one train when we could have two trains? Do you know what I'm saying? If you were a real train enthusiast, you'd want more trains out there.
I see what you're saying.
Deal with that.
I see what you're saying.
You're speechless. I get it.
How about 1,000 trains? Just a caboose on every single car.
Okay. So, that I don't know about that, actually. But maybe I need to think about it more. I like how this episode became accidentally train themed. So I love that.
I just finished reading a train book.
Okay. Any final book review before we have to go?
Oh, I was just going to say, I just read William Volman's Riding Toward Everywhere about catching out, riding the rails.
Okay. Illicitly. Did you enjoy the book?
I enjoyed the book.
Okay.
So I would recommend it.
All right.
I think he's a great writer. It's got a lot of anecdotes about going through Portland.
Okay. Well, that's Reed's Reading Corner. And this has been Genius Box. You don't like that name. We'll workshop the name. Nope. Ugh, he hated the name. Oh, boy. Okay, sorry.
Reading and writing today.
Reading, okay. Reading
the two R's.
Right. We'll get some arithmetic before the day is out.
We got some arithmetic in this.
Arithmetic. Okay. I'm there with you. We are just about done here this morning on the Genius Box.
It's our last show ever, folks.
No. We're going to be back next week.
Oh, yeah.
God willing, I guess. Thank you, Reed. Thank you, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
Oh, I got a thumbs up. Nate's all right, asleep. He's listening. Nate's asleep at the wheel. Just kidding. He's more alert and awake than ever. He doesn't even do coffee, guys. How does he do it? Okay.
Super coffee. He drinks a thing called super coffee.
Thank you guys for listening. We got to go, though. Just like the best joke you've ever told on this program.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, well, all
he
right.
He doesn't drink coffee, he drinks super coffee. Okay, that's
say
the last
it a third
say.
Time. We're going. Goodbye. Goodbye. See you next week.
You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only...